to handle the woman. There's a way, said a wise old man, a way known by every woman since the whole rigmarole began.
Dave Mallett showing his love of theater with a wonderful song from Camelot that he did on a great album of covers back, but 7 or 8 years ago, The Horse I Rode In On.
Yeah, and he does some, I mean, the Saginaw, Michigan, Steve Hart. I mean, he picked songs that you wouldn't think would go together, but the album is so good.
Well, and he also did this, that, and again, you got to love the song, but what a great cover of a Dick Curlis classic.
All you big and burly men who roll the trucks home, you better listen, you be thankful when you hear my song. You have really got it made when you're hauling goods any place on earth but those Haynesville woods. It's a stretch of the road of northern Maine that's never, ever, ever seen a smile. If they buried all the truckers that are lost in the woods, there'd be a tombstone every mile.
David Mallett passed away yesterday at the age of 73. We are remembering here his music and his life and just the great person that he was that we loved to hang around whenever we got the chance. I was so happy to post that picture on the Facebook page of the three of us together over at Brewer last year.
The first time I heard Tombstone Every Mile, was on an AM radio station late at night. I didn't even know where it was from. I didn't know who Dick Curlis was. I was very young. And then to hear it like that again, it brings it all around.
Yeah, it sure does. Time for Sports Lit 101 for, I guess, the final time in this edition of Downtown.
This iteration of Downtown.
Yes, who knows what the future holds.
Well, what I thought about this long and hard. There's people who judge such things or think of such things or are positioned to believe in such things would say that W.C. Hines' very short piece, Death of a Racehorse, is the finest piece of sports essay that they have ever read. Many people believe this. We were fortunate to have Bill Littlefield on right after his book, The Top of His Game, The Best Sports Writing of W.C. Hines, came out. And I thought that this was, I don't want people to think this is being maudlin, but I think we've always tried since the beginning to have authors and work on that was serious, not fluffy, silly stuff, but stuff that examines sport as literature. And this is one of them. This is from the New York Sun, July 28, 1949. Death of a Racehorse, Airlift, Son of Bold Venture, W.C. Hines. They were going to the post for the sixth race at Jamaica, two-year-olds, some making their first starts to go 5.5 furlongs, a purse of $4,000. They were moving slowly down the backstretch toward the gate, some of them cantering, others walking, and in the press box they had stopped their working or their kidding to watch most of them interested in one horse. Airlift, Jim Roach said, full brother of Assault. Assault who won the Triple Crown. Making this one, too, by Bold Venture himself, a Derby winner, out of Igual, herself by the great Equipoise. Great names in the breeding line, and now the little guy making his first start, perhaps the start of another great career. They were well off, though Airlift was fifth. They were moving toward the first turn, and now Airlift was fourth. They were going to the turn, and now Airlift was starting to go third, perhaps when he suddenly slowed. A horse stopping, and below in the stands you hear the sudden cries that the rest left him, still trying to run but limping, his jockey Dave Gorman half falling, half sliding off. He broke a leg, somebody, holding binoculars to his eyes, shouted in the press box. He broke a leg. Down before they were roaring for the rest, coming down the stretch now, but in the infield men were running toward the turn, running toward the colt and the boy standing beside him alone. There was a station wagon moving around the track toward them, and then in a moment a big green van they call the horse ambulance. Gorman was crying like a baby, one of them, coming out of the jockey room, said. He must have stepped in a hole, but you should have seen him crying. It's his left front ankle. Dr. J.G. Catlett, the veterinarian, was saying it's a compound fracture, and I'm waiting for confirmation from Mr. Hirst to destroy him. He was standing outside one of the stables beyond the backstretch, and he had just put in a call to Kentucky, where Max Hirst, the trainer, and Robert Klubberg, the owner, were attending the yearling sales. "When will you do it?" one of them asked. "Right as soon as I can," the doctor said, "as soon as I get confirmation. If it was an ordinary horse, I'd have done it right there." He walked across the road and around another barn to where they had the horse. The horse was still in the van. About 20 stable hands in dungarees and sweat-stained shirts, bareheaded or wearing old caps, standing around quietly and watching with Dr. M.A. Gilman, the assistant veterinarian. "We might as well get him out of the van," Catlett said, "before we give him the Novocaine. It'll be a little better out in the air." The boy in the van with the colt led him out, the colt limping, tossing his head a little, the blood running down and covering his left foreleg. When they saw him standing there outside the van now, the boy holding him, they started talking softly. "Full brother of Assault. Don't make no difference now, he's done. But damn, what a grand little horse. Ain't he a horse?" "It's a funny thing," Catlett said. "All the cripples that go out, they never break a leg. It always happens to a good-legged horse." A man, gray-haired and rather stout, wearing brown slacks and a blue shirt, walked up. "Then I better not send for the wagon yet," the man said. "No," Catlett said, "of course, you might just as well. Mr. Hirsch may say no, but I doubt it." "I don't know," the man said. "There'd be time in the morning," Catlett said, "but in this hot weather," the man said. They had sponged off the cold after they'd given him the shot to deaden the pain, and now he stood feeding quietly from some hay they had placed at his feet. In the distance, you could hear the roar of the crowd in the grandstand, but beyond it and above it, you could hear thunder and see the occasional flash of lightning. When Catlett came back the next time, he was hurrying, nodding his head and waving his hands. Now the thunder was louder, the flashes of lightning brighter, and now the rain was starting to fall. "All right," he said, shouting to Gilman. "Max Hirsch, talk to Mr. Klubberg. We've got the confirmation." They moved the curious back, the rain falling faster now, and they moved the colt over close to a pile of loose bricks. Gilman had the halter and Catlett had the gun, shaped like a bell with a handle at the top. The belly placed, the crowd silent on the colt's forehead just between the eyes. The colt stood still, and then Catlett, with a hammer in his other hand, struck the handle of the bell. There was a short, sharp sound, and the colt toppled onto his left side, his eyes staring, his legs straight out, the free legs quivering. "Ah," someone said. That was all they said. They worked quickly, the two vets removing the broken bones as evidence for the insurance company, the crowd silently watching. Then the heavens opened, the rain pouring down, the lightning flashing, and they rushed for the cover of the stables, leaving alone on his side near the pile of bricks, the rain running off his hide, dead an hour and a quarter after his first start. Airlift, son of Bold Venture, full brother of Assault.
Man, that's great.
That is I've never read anything better. And then I thought that we would end with something which I think is, in a funny way, very apropos. This is a poem by Don Johnson called "And the River Gathered Around Us," which Don read when he was on with us once. This is a poem that I think is like us, where the river's rising, but we ain't ready to leave. "And the river gathered around us. After they wheeled away the town, when the floodgates closed and the river turned on itself, we came back day after day to watch the cove slowly fill up. At the end of a week, one road in lay open. We drove it in three Ford cars and a pickup, towing Walsh Holt's rubber-tired wagon that the boys from Mountain City rode. It was not a Sunday. Most of us had jobs. But we agreed to one more game of ball before the smoothest diamond in three counties turned to lake bottom. Water already lapped at the right field fence where I killed a snake before the first pitch. A fastball the batter himself called a strike since we had no umpire. Wright went under with two out in their half of the third and we declared a ground ball to that field and out. I played barefoot and cheated toward the infield, but it didn't matter. Before the fifth was over, water covered all but the mound and the raked dirt in the plate. By then, anything not a bunt or a fly ball was an out, and we were losing 6-2. When their pitcher called time and said all three balls we had were waterlogged, and that he wouldn't ruin his arm for no damn game in a lake. So we brought him in halfway where it was wet, but close enough to lob those melanins in with no pain. Then we lost the bases, but ruled that running in the right direction counted if the runner didn't stop until he made it home or got out. We tied the score on four straight hits to left when a John boat floated through the and blocked the fielder's way. We called anything that hit the boat a homer, and it rained that inning. The score tied, and water finally touching the plate where both teams congregated, soaked and up to our knees in a field without bounds, where everything slowed and floated, nothing sliding between the flood beneath would ever be forgotten.
That's perfect.
Yeah. That seemed like the right. It's from Hummers, Knucklers, and Slow Curves, Contemporary Baseball Poems, forwarded by W.P. Kinsella from the University of Illinois Press.
Well, yeah, I don't want to get all maudlin either here, but sincere thank you to you for everything you've done in these past dozen years, not just with Sports Lit, but everything beyond that as well. But you helped bring my vision of this show to reality, which was to celebrate sport as what it is, entertainment, but to make it also be a literate show, a show for people that read, who love music, who love movies, who love art. And those are the kind of people that we've tried to reach out to in these last 13 and a half years. And a big part of that was what you brought to the table every Wednesday.
Well, I've considered this the luckiest thing that's happened to me since I first came. And my wife will tell you, I tell this all the time, because I wanted to be part of what you wanted to be part of, which was more Kornheiser and less talking heads and blathering idiots and hot takes and all the like. And I think if there's one word that sticks with me about this show, it's the word dignity. The show always had its dignity. We could be self-deprecating. We could be laughing. We could be making fun of things. But I think we always maintained a sense of dignity, that this was about the people who were listening to the show and not about us. And that'll remain a high point of my life.
Well, and I think about the incredible people that we've had a chance to talk with here on the show. I was just looking through the website because I don't always see some of the comments. Carrie does a lot of the management of those, but I was looking through and somebody weighed in about the last time we had Ron Smith on and talking about how great it is to hear Ron reading his own poetry. And I think of the times that he's been on, the time we talked, a couple times we talked to Bill Littlefield, Rick Tellender here on the show, and all of the wonderful writers that we had a chance
Frank
to meet
DeFord.
With.
Frank DeFord.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was, I think, the week before I first came. The people, but also it's think of all the long-term relationships that are made. When Chad Finn finally was here the other day, to see someone whose work I greatly admire and I've admired for a long time. Talking to Bob Ryan later, I mean, when I got to meet Bob Ryan and he came up to and did the keynote at SLA last June, we got to hang out with him. It doesn't get better than that.
Now, we've also got, and I mentioned this on the air a couple of days ago, we have a book problem. I mean, it's a good problem to have, but I started going through, you know, we filled a bookshelf. We've got a bunch of them piled up here in the studio. I had a filing cabinet in the production room. We have, I believe, over 150 books that have been sent to us. And this isn't even all of them. Some have made their way home to other people, but we've got a ton of books that we need to find a home for. So we're looking for a good place for some of these books.
Yeah, and some of these are pristine because we might get sent two copies and I would read one and mark it up and give it to you and we'd leave the other one that way. These books were provided especially by Nebraska. They've been phenomenal. Yeah.
And they're not all from Sports Lit, but we've got so many. And then I started putting them in piles. I'm like, okay, Bruce might want these because they were specifically Sports Lit. And then I started creating a pile for ones I want to hang on to because I want to read them again.
Yeah.
That pile got too big.
So, oh, I know.
It's crazy.
I looked at them. And then I think of the people we were going to talk to we were going to talk to Tim Wendell at Rebel Falls after the first of the year. That probably will be in a different iteration of things. But I think about the kinds of books that I didn't know. We get a guest on, you'd say, you might want to read this one, you know. What's the Every Tool is a Hammer? What was that? That great book. And some of the others that you said, yeah, take this home if you want to read it. What a great thing that is. I have an entire wall in my house of sports lit books.
There you go.
I'll do with all.
I may need that myself. Well, we're not done yet. 4:47 here on Downtown. Still to come. Well, speaking of great sports writers, two of them in the next hour. Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe and the quintessential American sports writer, Bob Ryan, all ahead in the second hour of Downtown.
This is Dr. Wendy Walsh. You're listening to Downtown with Rich.